il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata! Zapata! Dovrebbe essere gol! È gol! Zapata! Lo dice la Goal Line Technology! Al 97esimo il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud!
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, nice to have you here again.
Yeah, what's up guys? I'm back once again here. Glad to be here. Big episode today. It's the 20th episode, so big milestone for us.
Big milestone indeed, yeah. I can't believe it's episode number 20, to be honest. It feels like, I think it's probably because we've had sort of two seasons of it, so it feels like it's been a little bit broken up, but yeah, how's things, man? How are you doing?
Good, can't complain. The daylight saving time changed here in the US, and I don't know, maybe it did it for you as well. I honestly don't know how it works around the world. Mine state, where I live, Arizona, is the only one that doesn't actually partake in it, so my time doesn't change. But my work schedule does, because I go off of Philadelphia time, which is on the other side of the country, so I have to get into work now an hour earlier, but I get to leave an hour earlier too, so that's not bad.
That's pretty cool. I'll take an early finish.
Yeah, it felt like I left early today, even though I got, you know, the same amount of time at work. I felt like I was going home early.
It's good. I just Googled it, because I'm not very good with our daylight saving time. Ours is Sunday the 25th of March. We go back an hour, I guess. I think. And then it reverts on the 28th of October. So there you go. The more you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find it interesting, though. I've looked at the states before. Like, there's so much variety in terms of who uses it, who doesn't, the different degrees and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have like, I don't know, four or five different time zones in the country here, so it's definitely unique. Most European countries obviously only have one because they could fit in one, but we're a little large, so we struggle with that.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't want to mention it, but I'm going to have to mention it. What happened with Spurs last week in the Champions League?
Oh, man, yeah. Juve did what Juve does, I guess. A 3-minute, you know, drop of consciousness from the Spurs, and Juve pushed through. Did you see Pochettino after the game said some stuff about Juve and the refs? That was a little shady, huh?
It was feisty. It certainly was. I think he has probably said what a lot of managers wouldn't say, but he was clearly so fired up after the game, as you would be, that he just said it how it was, and I respect him for that.
Yeah,
because now people know.
Well, not only that, but it's something that we've seen as Serie A fans for years now, and it was proven before. I don't know if it's going to get ever proven again, if it's still going on, but there definitely seems to be something out there, you know, and good on him for pointing it out and showing it to the world stage, you know, get the Premier League people noticing that as well as the UEFA, and hopefully something could change.
It's absolutely mental, though, isn't it? The idea that an owner could just go down and speak to the ref at halftime.
Yeah, it's insane. Oh, did you see what happened the other day with the owner of some Greek club?
Went on the pitch with a gun.
Yeah, that's insane, man. I mean, whoa. We thought Juve was bad.
I won't put it beyond Juve to go on the pitch with a gun, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially now VAR is... yeah, it's mad, it's that thing in Greece. It's mental. They've suspended the league now, you know.
Wow. No, I did not know that.
Which I suppose is fair enough when something like that happens. But yeah, it's crazy. Football in Greece is crazy. You know, we talk about football, obviously it's our passion, and we always want to see our teams do well. But in some countries, Greece one of them, it is life or death.
Clearly.
Life and death.
Very clearly.
And life or death. So, yeah, that was absolutely mental. And you see the West Ham fans as well.
What did they do this time?
Well, on Saturday they were losing at home to Burnley and they like invaded the pitch about three times.
Wow.
Because they're angry at the owners. The rumour is that the owners stopped them from having a peaceful protest outside the ground before the game. they told the security not to let it happen. So the fans were obviously absolutely fuming about that. So they took it out during the game by invading the pitch, like just a few people, and then throwing coins up at the directors and stuff like that. It's,
well, I have to say, watching West Ham just implode this season and potentially most likely going down is one of the happiest things I've ever seen in my life. I just despise that club and fan base with such passion. It's insane. I mean, I think it was last season there was some knobhead on Twitter that was tweeting to me, a West Ham fan, saying that Milan was a finished club. And mind you, this was right after we were just sold to the Chinese too. He was saying, we're a finished club, we'll never get money again, we'll never move up, we're on the down and down. And that West Ham was on the up and up, and they're probably going to finish in Champions League this year, meaning like this current year. And my response was, okay, one, we both finished sixth, so it wasn't an issue. Like, two, we just got sold, like, things are going to change. And now here we are, 4 points outside, or 5 or 6 points, whatever it is, outside of Champions League. And West Ham's like 3 points outside of relegation. So very, very happy with that. And I hope they go down.
Yeah, West Ham are in serious, serious trouble. Like, nobody really saw it coming because their squad is still pretty good. I think they've made a couple of bad decisions managerially. Obviously, Bilic is a bit of a club legend there, but they've held on to him for a bit too long. And now they've got Moyes in, who, you know, we all know what he did at Man United. Absolutely flopped. And now they're paying the price for it. And the fans hate the owners. They hate their new stadium. They hate the manager. They hate the players. It's not good there. It's the kind of atmosphere that could see him relegated again. And I'm with you. I lose respect for that club every week, it seems. So I'd love to see them go down, especially if it means that we stay up.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you saw that we had 81% possession on Saturday, us being Huddersfield.
Looking at those stats, you would think the scoreline was 10-0. I mean, I'm shocked that that was a 0-0 game. That's incredible. That's almost more impressive than the stats themselves.
Yeah, I said to you before that I thought it was the second highest Prem possession stat ever. It's actually number one. I just looked it up. It was number one. It's a new Premier League record for possession at 81%. Swansea went down to 10 men after 10 minutes. They were playing for a draw anyway, but then that just completely made their mind up for them. And we hit the post twice. A couple of amazing saves from Fabianski in their goal, and we just couldn't break the deadlock. But we've got Crystal Palace on Saturday. If we can, if the luck changes and we can win that, then, you know, I'll feel a bit more optimistic. Yeah. But anyway, well, that's let's talk about the EPL.
Yeah, that's actually a really good segue here, because we are linked to a Swansea midfielder. What'd you see from that game?
Nothing. Nothing. It just wasn't the kind of game for him to succeed. For someone who obviously supports a Premier League team and watches a lot of Premier League football because of work and stuff, I don't know an awful lot about Ki Sung-yung. I know that he's scored some important goals for them in the past few seasons. He's been there a while now. But I just don't know much about him. I just know he's a central midfielder. I think he's more of a technical player than a physical, like, combative kind of midfielder. So, you know, one of the reports that came out from Milan News today was that they're looking at him just to play in the midfield. He'd most likely be in place of Bonaventura rather than an alternative to Kessié, because they're just completely different players. It's a free transfer, but I didn't see anything on Saturday because of the kind of game that it was. You know, he was kind of out of the game because they needed to defend so deep. And that's a bit of a shame, because we had been linked to him before, so I wanted to keep an eye on him, but he genuinely just did not get the ball that much. But clearly was part of a squad of 9 outfield players that managed to keep us at bay for 90 minutes, so fair enough.
Yeah, I guess that's the one positive you could take from that for them. I don't know anything about Swansea players at all. The last one I paid any attention to was Michu way back in the day. I think that was like 2013 or something like that. He was on fire. But there is another Premier League midfielder we've been linked with pretty heavily, another free transfer, quite a bit higher wages, Jack Wilshere. What are your thoughts on that?
Difficult one. He just has this stigma attached to him of being a player who cannot stay fit. He cannot, you know, shrug off his injury problems. And for the kind of money that he's on now at Arsenal, they can't afford to pay him that anymore. Not for the fact that he can only give them, say, 30 games a season max in all competitions. For what it's worth, I think he'd do quite well in Syria because of his style. He covers a lot of ground. Technically, he's not the worst, but he gets stuck in. You know, he's not nowhere near as good, obviously, but he's a bit of a Nainggolan. Because he can score goals as well. But again, it's just this thing. We're going to have to pay big wages to tempt him here. And I just don't think it would be a wise investment. Especially considering that he maybe wouldn't start in our current team.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of my thought process on it as well. Is I do think he would do better in Serie A because it is a slower paced game. I think that environment would serve him pretty well, especially being so injury prone. But that's also the reason why he is a potential free transfer for us. You know, Arsenal want him to sign a 25% pay cut because of his injuries, and he's not willing to do that, which is leading to a free transfer, which from what I heard, he wanted 6 million over 4 years. So not per season like Donnarumma's getting, but over 4 years. Now, I don't know what the math is on that because, well, math just isn't my strong suit, but I don't think that's incredibly high for a midfielder with his ability. But like you said, risk versus reward, I don't know. I don't think that is a necessary signing, especially with it really just being a depth player. Well, actually, I take that back because where we're at now, I mean, with us supposedly having a Pepe Reina medical today, we're clearly trying to sign backup depth players that could walk into some starting 11s. I mean, Reina was the number one goalkeeper for Napoli. Wilshere's been starting for Arsenal just about his whole career. So maybe that is what a good idea. Potentially, we're going to be playing in three competitions again next season. So maybe it is a good move. I don't know. I'm torn on it. I'm pretty torn on it, but it does lead us into the game.
I hate that we have to discuss this. We were so excited for the occasion, our first real big occasion of the season, so to speak, or certainly of the calendar year. Arsenal at home, Europa League, round of 16, first leg at San Siro. There was rumours that it was a sellout. In the end, I think the crowd was around about 72,000. Obviously, there was four of our starting 11 were under 21.
Four were under 21 and seven under 25.
Yeah, and my theory is that they just completely froze under the spotlight. We lost 2-0. Henrik Mkhitaryan scored his first goal for the club. And then, who got the second goal?
It wasn't Wilshere, was it? Was it Wilshere?
No,
it was the other midfielder, Ramsey's.
Yeah, Ramsey, that was it. Yeah, he rounded the keeper. My mind went blank then. So yeah, a missed opportunity leaves us with a lot to do in the second leg. But what do you think? Do you subscribe to my theory that we just couldn't handle the big occasion because we had such a youthful team out there?
Yes and no. I think that's partial of it. I think there was something wrong with the pitch. I know Arsenal didn't have the same problems we did, but if you rewatch the game, players on both sides were slipping very often, and we tried to start off with a very fast pace, and that was making us slip in dangerous situations, like the one where Ramsey scored. I don't believe he scores that if Donnarumma didn't slip on his ass. I mean, he just fell over. Then we'd be going into this game down one. We could potentially come back and win it. It's going to be pretty hard now. Still don't think we're out. I think there was a lot of mental lapses there. I think maybe it was a spotlight. Because Calabria's never played a team of that caliber. Has Roman Yoli? I really don't know. I don't think he has.
No.
Kessie has.
No, not.
You know, I mean,
not in a non-domestic game.
Right.
Obviously, you could argue Juve are definitely better than Arsenal, and obviously they play against them, but
Calabria
had a bad game.
Yeah, and I think that's unfortunate because, and he was down injured, you know, with air quotations there, like two or three times during that game. I mean, he was getting pretty bullied, and I think that alone disheartened him. And not starting him over the weekend against Genoa really showed how much energy we were missing on that right flank like we're used to. But yeah, back to Arsenal. I mean, the first half was probably the worst first half of football I've ever watched this season, at least. But then we came back second half and still didn't look great, but I saw a lot more of the Gattuso team that we have grown to know. And I don't know, call me crazy, but I don't think we're out of this. I think we could win in London almost for sure. I don't know if it's enough to push us through because of 3-goal differences. That's going to be hard to win 3-0 against Arsenal at their home, you know. But
all 2-0. We only need 2-0.
No, we don't. That'd bring it to extra time.
Yeah, we could go through an extra time and penalties. That'd be fine by me at this point.
I just don't know if we'd be able to hang in there that long. And would it even be beneficial? I mean, we got so much going on with the league right now, being so close to Champions League spot.
Think of the buzz if we managed to do it on penalties or something.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't such a personal disdain towards Arsenal, I would be okay with us just saying, let's kind of drop out and focus on the league. But because I just despise the team so much and have talked so much about it, we gotta at least get some goals back. I mean, I think we can. I think we can. That's this Thursday. We'll find out. You are potentially attending?
I'll be going, yeah. I'll be going. Got my ticket. It's going to be a late one for me by the looks of it. And if it goes all the way to penalties, I'm going to have to watch the last penalty and then run out of the stadium back to the train station. But yeah, I'll be there. Thursday night was a strange one because even though I wasn't that confident when talking about the game, previewing the game, because I know that despite Arsenal's bad run, there's a lot of quality in their team. And even without two of their two main strikers in the squad, I knew they could do us some damage. And do you know what? I think it was one of those games where sometimes you've got to hold your hands up and say the opponent was just actually a bit too good. Like, Arsenal pulled that performance out of nowhere. You know, we came into that game full of confidence. They went in with zero confidence, without a couple of key players, you know, like mentioned. And they played a perfect away leg. Like, you know, two goals before half-time to really silence the crowd. And then they defended solidly after that. And I tip my hat to them because that was a pretty much a textbook first leg away from home. But, you know, from our point of view, did we get things wrong? I think we did. I think we showed them way too much time and space on the ball. I don't think the midfielders pressed high enough. And when they did, we left ourselves wide open down the middle. And that's what led Ozil to have one of his better recent games. Same with Ramsey. You know, they just dropped into that hole and it made it very difficult for the two centre-backs because they were isolated. I feel like Donnarumma got sold out a few times because the centre-backs played a high line and they were just willing to run in behind. You know, if they had anyone up front apart from Welbeck, you could argue we could have lost that game 4-0 maybe. But we also got penalised for not taking early chances, like in those first 10 minutes or so when we were on top in the game and, you know, we lashed a couple wide. And, you know, I think there were so many young players who saw the spotlight and a chance to impress that perhaps nerves came in, but also perhaps just a bit of over-enthusiasm when we needed just to calm it down, play our basic game. A 0-0 wouldn't have been the worst result in the world, honestly, if we could have just made sure that we kept them at bay, kept it tight, you know, try and nick a goal here and there. But a 0-0 wouldn't have been bad because then it's the away goals that we've got 90 minutes to get in London. But you know, I'd rather have lost the game 2-0 than 2-1, which sounds baffling, but when you think about it, if we'd lost the game 2-1, we'd still have to score two at the Emirates.
Right.
Because 1-0 we'd have gone out on away goals. So I kind of like the idea that we have to properly attack from the first whistle.
Yeah,
rather than just look for that one goal, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll start with a 4-4-2. I really do. I think Trone will start up front with Andrea Silva. And we've just got to hope. We've just got to hope we get an early goal. And that, you know, if we're, for all this talk about how the atmosphere might have rubbed off as pressure on some of the players on Thursday night, the atmosphere on Thursday night at the Emirates is going to be completely different. Because they're not, it's not a loud stadium at all.
Right.
It's going to be silent for the majority of the game, apart from, you know, what should be a noisy travelling support. So it's like, you know, if we get one goal and properly silence the stadium and get the fans, get the Arsenal fans nervous, that's going to rub off on their players, I think. And, you know, Östersunds went and won there. They went 2-0 up there, and all of a sudden, you could sense the Arsenal players were really sort of struggling to cope with the pressure and with the groans from the home support. So we need to get there and get an early goal and put them under some pressure. And if we do that, then I'll be optimistic. But I just can't see us keeping a clean sheet.
And I really don't either. But one thing that's really is playing in our favor is I heard Mustafi? He's supposedly injured now. He had put up a knee injury and he's not going to be playing on Thursday.
Oh.
So, I mean, that helps a little bit.
Center back.
And then another Chambers. Thing is, you know, why I think we have such a good chance. I mean, most of the time when we watch games, we remember it with our emotion at that time. So, obviously, we all went into this pretty high on confidence and hope, and then things were shattered quickly. So, our opinion of the game just went from shit to shittier. And looking statistically, the scoreline's almost unfair. I mean, more possession for us, twice as many shots. We had equal passing percentage. We had 10 corners to their 3. The thing that got us was 6 of our shots were blocked where none of theirs were. And I don't think it was Donnarumma having a bad game. I mean, if you look at the goals, one was a slip.
He couldn't do anything.
The first one was a deflection. I think he was saving it if it didn't bounce off Bonucci. And not to blame Bonucci. I mean, he did what every defender's supposed to do, is get in front of the ball. It just got hit on the side and lucky bounce. I mean, not to say we were unlucky, because Arsenal was without a doubt the better team on Thursday, but luck was definitely on their side as well.
Yeah.
Even with the performances we both put out there, that game realistically should have ended 0-0. If not 1-0 in our favor because of that first chance. If Jack was, you know, an inch taller or an inch faster, he would have scored in the second minute. But it is what it is. You know, we move on. We've been in worse situations. I just think we'll be good. Well, at least we won't be embarrassed. And I think that's the biggest thing. We're going to put on a show, and win, lose, or draw, I don't think that we're going to be as disrespected on the international European scene like we have been in recent years. I think we're going to at least say, hey, we deserve to be here at this level in this competition. You know, win or lose the tie, we're going to at least prove that we deserve to be there.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, is definitely to come out of the two legs with our heads held high. And we, at the moment, I think our heads are down after that first leg, because the players know it's a missed opportunity, and I think Gattuso knows that that things just didn't happen for us on the night. But as the players have said, and as I think Gattuso said, they've got a bit of a free shot on Thursday now. You know, everyone's writing us off, everyone's saying that that it should be comfortable for Arsenal, but, you know, it's up to the players now to prove us wrong. And if we go there and do it, I mean, geez. You know, you can say that getting knocked out would be beneficial for the league, but I just think confidence-wise, if this team was to go and turn Arsenal over and somehow get to the quarterfinals, I mean, that would be more beneficial for me than getting knocked out, genuinely. But be interesting to see what happens. I'm really, really looking forward to it still, because I haven't seen Milan play in England. Well, I've actually seen Milan legends play at the Emirates already against Arsenal's legends team, but now I'm looking forward to seeing the proper team, obviously, in the away end with a few lads from the Curva Sud, so that should be interesting. Better have my singing voice ready, and fingers crossed we can do it. Like I said, it's a free shot. Let's just give it a go. Let's attack from the start. If we concede a goal, do you know what? Maybe shut up shop and say, look, it's not going to happen. But yeah, we've got the players out there that can influence the game. And you know, we went to Roma and we won 2-0 there. So why can't we go and keep a clean sheet and win at Arsenal? And that's that. But speaking of clean sheets, we go from a defeat to a victory Sunday. I'm not even going to describe the game. I'm going to let you do it because you've waited so long for this moment.
Oh, what a game. What a game. It was mind-numbingly boring in the first half. I mean, I think everyone wanted to take a nap instead. But
I did. I actually knew we did.
But that second half was a total change. I mean, high-paced tempo from both teams. We scored a goal, disallowed. They scored a goal, disallowed. And then, the moment I have been waiting for since June of 2017, Andre Silva with the game winner in the 95th minute, 94th minute, whatever. It's all the same. 95th minute, even better. Yeah. To score the game winner with the header from a perfect, well, not even a perfect cross from Suso, because it was a little short. It was stopping early, which is why Andre didn't have any run up on it. He was at a dead plant on that ball, jumped, and with just the sheer strength in his neck, shot that ball like a cannon into the net. And Perrin still got a hand on it and just couldn't save it. That's so incredible. I mean, just pure neck muscles to do that. And the celebration, I mean, he's deserved it for so long. It's now his 9th goal in all competition, first one in Serie A. All those stupid, shitty Inter joke tweets are done. There'll never be another one. And I'm just elated. I kicked over the chair I'm currently sitting in. I ripped off my jersey that I was wearing, which was Andre Silva. I might have even shed a couple tears. I don't know. Maybe it was just onions in my room or something. But I was overjoyed. I sent him a DM. I'm campaigning right now to get him to sign my jersey. I want to send it to him. So go retweet that, guys, if you see it. It's my pinned tweet. Make him notice me. I want that jersey signed, damn it. And I couldn't be happier. Very great way to end the weekend, even though it was nerve-wracking leading up to that last second of the game. Because it was. It was the final second of the game. The ref blew the whistle while we were still celebrating. Didn't even wait for us to line back up. I mean, it was the last second. And right after they score it, the commentator, or I don't know, whatever channel I was watching, it was BN, they panned to a Genoa fan in the stands.
Yes, I saw that.
And I've never seen such a blank stare in my life. He was just looking into his own soul, just regretting everything he's ever done as a fan of the team. And I was overwhelmed. I went to the gym twice. I was so excited I couldn't sleep.
Wow. Yeah, I think the word to describe it would be magical. Sometimes, you know, football, you can write scripts and they don't match up to what actually happens out on the field. And this was one of those moments. You know, it was such a boring game. But there was the feeling that after the Arsenal defeat, we needed to find a way to win it. We're talking the final kick of the game. You know, Suso, who they basically pocketed for the whole game, really. They kept his effectiveness to a minimum. But he sort of jolts inside, straightens up again, and then jolts inside again to get some space for the cross. Whips it in, and like I say, it was just a bit in front of him. And Andrea Silva, who's on as a substitute, gets his head down and just scoops. Oh, just a beautiful header in at the near post. A gorgeous header. And Perrin, who had an amazing game, really, couldn't quite keep it out. And the celebration said it all. There's a picture with Andre Silva running towards the corner. And Cutrone is basically grabbing him by the shoulder. And Cutrone looks 10 times as elated as Andre Silva does. And I think the squad has been waiting for him to score that goal. I won't say it's like a monkey off the back, because we know the quality that André Silva has because he's done it on the European stage. But it's that first goal in Serie A that is the one that's going to make all the difference to him, just to get off zero. And the way that it came, like I say, it's just one of those scripts that you honestly cannot write. And I'm chuffed, because honestly, I feel like our performance did probably warrant nicking the 3 points. Genoa are just not. We've had some problems there in recent years in terms of getting results. You know, we've had a couple of spankings, really. And I wasn't looking forward to this game at all, especially on the back of Thursday night. And they made it very difficult for us. You know, they're languishing down in the sort of lower mid-table area, probably just about clear of relegation. Actually need to double-check that. But
I believe they're in 12th.
I think they've just about managed to steer themselves clear of relegation after the 13th, but they are 6 points clear. After a really bad start, they've managed to pull clear of the bottom three, which is important for them, because if they ever got relegated, my God. But I don't know if I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but Genoa are a team that I have a particularly strong dislike for some reason. I think it's because their fans are absolutely obsessed with us. You know, the amount of times during the game they're all chanting, you know, Rossoneri, Pezzo di Merda, and, you know, just general insults. It's like, well, obsession, absolute obsession. And they're a nothing club, really. You know, they won a few things back in the early 1900s. But since then, they've just sort of been this club that's not really represented its city as well as Sampdoria have. And that's the honest truth of it. So I always love getting one over on Genoa. And I'm delighted that it came the way that it did. And, you know, you see what it means to the players. You see what it means to Gattuso. And I think that's part of the reason that we've just been talking about the Arsenal game with a little bit of confidence. Because that's what it is. It's confidence. It's momentum. It's positive energy. And that's still resonating throughout the team despite a difficult night on Thursday.
My only disappointment in the game is this was like one of the few games all season where I didn't tweet out before the game saying André Silva scores the winner, and of course it's the time he does. I wish I would have had that. The retweets would have been plentiful, but I'm still happy regardless.
You would have jinxed it then.
Right, yeah, which apparently that's what I'm known for now, even though I've only been wrong about the Arsenal game in the last few months. Apparently I've got this reputation as just being extremely overconfident, and people just don't seem to understand that that's what we do in 2018. There's no such thing as jinx anymore. This is the Gattuso effect. Motivation,
positive
confidence,
mental attitude,
the weight of the badge. Art of attraction. We want the win, get the win. None of this negative Nancy sourpuss shit that's going around. Get that off the timeline. Back to positivity. Let's go.
Well, a bit more positivity for you. Lazio and Inter both didn't win, which means that we are now 6 points behind Lazio in fourth, but with a game in hand.
Not to mention, I believe Inter plays Sampdoria this weekend, correct? Which, away as well.
Yeah.
They could potentially lose that. And if we beat Chievo, which, let's be real, there's no reason not to, then we're what?
Bloody hell.
2 points
Chievo
off.
Were 1 point off the bottom three.
Exactly.
I didn't realize they... I think they started the season fairly well, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they won a couple games off the bat. Yes, yeah, they were in like third or something to begin the season.
And they have really dropped off, which is natural because they don't have a good team. But
right.
Ooh, yeah, that's nasty. So yeah, there's no excuses for not beating them at the weekend. And like you say, Inter face a very tough trip to Sampdoria. I mean, Sampdoria have already turned over us. It was Montella's team, but and they turned over Juve. They were 3-0 up against Juve and beat them 3-2. And he's got a good team going there, Marco Giampaolo. So I would really love for a low-confidence Inter team like they have at the moment to go there and get stuffed. So, like, yeah, Let's see that happen, and then we can close that gap further, hopefully. You know what will happen? We'll end up drawing with Genoa and Inter will somehow win, but...
you know what's wild? We beat Genoa already, by the way. Don't forget it.
Yeah. Sorry.
Inter's only lost three times this Serie A season, which is really crazy to think about. They've just had so many draws lately, and that's how we've been gaining points on them.
Yeah, I mean, they've drawn 10 games. That's five more than us.
Well, and since Christmas, I mean, since December, one draw, then two losses, and one, two, three, four, five straight draws after that, and then a win, and then a loss, and then the win against Benevento, our game postponed, and then the draw against Napoli. So they'll probably draw against Sampdoria.
Yeah, I would describe that as stuttering form, to say the least.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I mean, it's something that I've spoken to some of the Inter lads that I know. Did you see Spalletti's comments after the game?
Oh, yes, how he said the team was lucky and doesn't have any quality.
Yep, and then he ripped into Icardi. And said that he doesn't know how to play for the team. He's just a selfish player. And then ripped into Cancelo by saying that, you know, if he has a bad game, it's always that he should have been playing on the other wing, or that he should have been playing 10 yards further forward or something. And then he ripped into the owners by saying that, you know, we had 10 names that we were linked to and we only ended up with Rafinha. He has gone full kamikaze mode.
Yeah, that's a quick way to get sacked.
He did it at Roma. And no matter how many times I said to call them friends who support Inter, I said, you know, this guy is not the savior by any means, because he has a reputation for going into clubs when things start going badly. He doesn't hold fire. He turns and starts friendly fire, and it doesn't work. It creates a poisonous atmosphere. And like you say, I think he's heading for. He might go at the end of the season, genuinely. I don't know where, but it seems to me that his relationship with Sunning and with the board is not good.
Well, maybe that's kind of a trend, though. If you look at Mancini, his return, that was short-lived, and it was same stuff. He self-destructed, couldn't handle the board, wanted out of there. And he even said positive things about us recently, didn't he? Saying that we are the only Milanese club that knows how to run a company. Or the team.
Yeah, I think that's because he wanted the job, to be fair.
Yeah, true.
But no, it's interesting. I think there's a lot going on there in terms of unfulfilled promises with Inter and with Sunning. A lot of frustration, and they're not out of the wilderness yet with regards to financial fair play. And I know that sounds ironic given the financial cloud that we have hanging over us, at least, you know, reportedly. It doesn't seem that they're any better over the other side of the San Siro, so to speak. And you know, for all that they had that great start to the season, we knew in the back of our minds that the wheels would fall off, but we probably cast a few envious glances towards what Spalletti was doing. They were playing really badly at the start of the season, but winning games by a goal, and they were up there. You know, there was even talk of a possible Scudetto challenge, but the wheels have come off, and my God, have they come off. And I think Spalletti's lashed out now, and that might be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And, you know, someone suggested to me that he's done it to get the players motivated ahead of a difficult game against Sampdoria. How does that motivate the players?
No, in any way. It's one thing to say, like... they need to step it up, you know, they're better than this or something like that. But saying Icardi's a selfish player, he doesn't know how to play for a team.
To say the squad has no quality, how must they be feeling after that?
Right, I mean, that's the quickest way to make me not want to play for my coach, to go out of my way to lose, you know, to not train hard. That's gonna, it just doesn't help.
No, and... You know, you could it would be very, very, very like vague argument, but you could say that like the players will want to prove that they have quality. But I just don't think Spalletti is a good man manager at all. you know, he kind of messed up with the Totti situation. He bowed out at Roma in spectacular fashion. And he appears to be a beacon of instability. And I don't think he'll be Inter boss next season at all. And that means that he might drive the club into a ditch in the time between now and the end of the season, which I would not be against at all. So yeah, let's just see what happens with them, I guess, and keep closing the gap. That's what we've got to do. Keep closing that gap and then hopefully leapfrog them, and then that will be psychologically a huge hurdle overcome. It's interesting, we talked, didn't we, you know, a few episodes ago, maybe nearer the beginning of the season when we weren't doing great and they were doing well, about how Inter are 1 year ahead in their project. They're going back to year zero as it stands. They really are. Like, you know, if they manage to somehow miss out on Europe this season, Icardi's gone. They can say goodbye to him. Perisic will arguably be going as well. Rafinha won't be signing permanently. Skriniar will go. You know, they're treading a very fine line at the moment. And there's a real atmosphere of paranoia around the club. But I hope it stays around for a while. So, what else? Anything else?
Well, I was just looking at the next four games for really us and the three teams above us. It's gonna. We might pass Inter, but it's gonna be tough to pass Roma and Lazio, just because we play easy game, hard game, easy game, hard game. Potentially, those two hard games are the hardest of the season. Juve, then Napoli.
Yeah.
Now I think we could get some points against Napoli because I'm playing conspiracy theorists with Pepe Reina, you know, maybe being sick or making a few silly mistakes or something for us. But Lazio played three real easy games against low-level sides, then Roma. So they have one tough game in that four-game stretch. Roma have one tough game in that four-game stretch, and that's against Lazio. Inter, we might pass them because they play Samp and Torino and Atlanta, which, you know, those are teams that could beat them. And with their current form, I'd say anyone could, honestly. It just matters who shows up that day, but... I don't know. It's a tough one. It might come down to the wire for us if we were really pushing for Champions League here.
I mean, interesting, though, what you say about Lazio. They dropped 2 points away at Cagliari at the weekend. Right.
Almost all three.
Almost lost. Yeah, exactly. So I think it goes to show that no team is immune to slip-ups at the moment. And when you consider Lazio had such a lead on Roma, and now Roma are above them, it's crazy how the tables are turning all around the league. And same with Napoli, you know, they looked so comfortable at the top of Serie A. And now all of a sudden, you know, Juve are on top with a game in hand. And
right now, everyone said, you know, Juve's won the league already, which I genuinely think they have.
It's so annoying. I detest both clubs, but I detest Napoli slightly less.
Right.
So I would have liked to see them do it just to break the monopoly of Serie A. Because when you... I think I mentioned this in the group chat. When you look at Serie A and you look at what Napoli were 3 years ago, they were a nothing club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we beat them at home in our 2014-15 season when Menez scored that beautiful goal. You know, they were nothing. They were they certainly were nothing near Scudetto challenges. And now here they are. You know, in a very quick space of time, they've assembled a talented squad and they're fighting for the title. And it's like, well, could that be us next year? You know?
Potentially.
Don't get me wrong, Sarri's done an amazing job there. And the players that they have, you know, there's still three or four that would absolutely walk into our team. But, you know, it does get you thinking that they're challenging the establishment. And Juve, to say they had that, was it last season they had the shocking start and recovered?
Yes.
And ended up winning the league comfortably. You know, they're not going to win it comfortably this time. I think it's going to go all the way. And they still got to play each other, haven't they? Juve and Napoli.
They do. Coming up soon, I believe.
That is going to be huge. huge game. I never write off this Napoli team because they seem to find a way to snatch unlikely victories out of nowhere. But that defeat at home to Roma and not winning against Inter, you know, despite having all the best chances, that could be what comes to bite them on the ass come the end of the season. They'll look back at those games and see them as, you know, where the tide turned and where Juve sort of got the dominance back. But it's not over. There's only a point in it. And let's hope that it's a good Scudetto race. So, yeah, I think that's it, unless you've got any more observations on the league generally to make. I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hell's Verona are second bottom. I mean, what is going on with them?
They're a terrible team.
Yeah, but, like, they're a big club, really, when you look at the teams that are around them. You know, AS are certainly the biggest team in Verona, and they won Serie A in 1985, which I know is a long time ago now, but you don't just get forgotten about like that. They came up from Serie B last year. Then they invested in the squad fairly well. I mean, like, Churchy's there now. I know he's not a good player, but you think at that level. They got Moise Kean on loan from Juve. They got Daniele Verde on loan from Roma. There's some decent-ish players there, and they're just really struggling again. Felicioli's on loan from us there, but I'm guessing he's not playing much because he's certainly more of a prospect, isn't he? But, yeah.
I just thought of the thing I was going to mention and goes hand-in-hand with what you were just talking about. We're potentially weighing up a bit for Sarri. What do you think of that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What do I think of it? I don't think it's true, for a start. I can't remember what the source was, but I also just think that... I think that when it comes down to clubs and keeping hold of players and keeping hold of managers, they're two completely different things. You know, players are under a contract that they're expected to honour, and there is an element of control that clubs have over players when it comes to moving to a rival. You can argue with Napoli, that kind of went out the window with the Higuain thing, and it does to an extent in some certain situations, but I think managers, I don't feel like they can stand in their way as much. If they want to go, they'll go. Because, you know, if a manager's held there against their will, they could just mess up the club.
Right.
They could just take it out on them, whereas a player can't really do that. Yeah, if we offered to triple his salary or something, which isn't out of the question, I suppose, then he might have his head turned and Napoli may be left with no choice. For what it's worth, I think that if Napoli... This sounds weird, but I think if Napoli win nothing, then he'll stay there, because I think he wants to win a trophy with them. But if they win something... You know, if they manage to win Serie A, because that's, of course, the only competition that they're in now, if they manage to win Serie A, then I think he'll go, because he's probably reached his ceiling with that squad. And he'll go take on a new challenge, maybe in the Premier League. He's been linked with Arsenal quite a lot. But honestly, I could see Chelsea going for him, because they seem to like the going down the Italian route now. What do you think? Would you like to see it?
No.
We're talking about it like Gattuso's not done a fantastic job. And we don't even need, we don't even need to be talking about a new head coach. But it's interesting because it's Sarri.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I really brought it up, because I don't think there's any point to bringing him in. The only replacement that would make any bit of sense, and not even make sense, but the only one worthwhile, is Conte, who we've discussed at length multiple times on this podcast already. But Gattuso's done good, and if we don't finish inside any Europe spots, then sure, bring in a replacement, but I don't think that's the case. I firmly believe we'll have three competitions next season, whether it be Europa, where we're currently situated in, or Champions League, which we're very close to achieving. So I don't think Gattuso leaves next season. I think one thing that the management does well that kind of does give a little belief to this rumor, they're very good at lining up things for the future. With all these signings that they're already going for now, it's rare to have potentially three free transfers already lined up in March. I think that's pretty abnormal, especially one being as big as Pepe Reina as a backup goalkeeper. So I could see them doing that in the event that Gattuso doesn't stay, which is potentially the same reason they did with Pepe Reina in the event that Donnarumma goes to PSG. So maybe they're lining it up and just kind of having it there and not really giving, you know, giving Sarri the offer, but not saying for sure. Maybe it's like pending how they decide with Gattuso or something. Just kind of giving him a taste, something to think about. But I don't think it's necessary, honestly. I wouldn't even want him here if Gattuso left. I would take him if they said this is your manager because, well, I don't have a choice. But I don't think he's worth it. I think he's a bit overrated.
Yeah, I mean he's not really done anything yet when you consider it. He's taken. Yeah, he won something for a start. It's an interesting thing as well when you consider about Gattuso when he first took charge. You know, that first game at Benevento, nobody saw him as the option moving forward long term. It was one of those things where potentially it was going to be until the end of the season because Ancelotti was taking a break and because Conte was probably going to be there until the end of the season, and you know, all the other options it seemed like we were going to have to wait for. Now all of a sudden here we are in this situation where with however many games left in the season, it seems like Gattuso's almost untouchable. You know, we spoke a few episodes ago about Conte still potentially coming in and Gattuso working as like Conte's right-hand man and learning a bit more about coaching from one of the best. I don't see a need for that now.
Me either.
Because Gattuso has his philosophy, he has his way, and he knows how he wants us to play. He knows what it, you know, I've said it probably the last two episodes now, but he is our Conte in a way. And he has his blueprint that he wants to stamp on the club, and if we were to disrupt that, if we were to ignore the progress that he's made in the last 2 months, and you know the amount that he's dragged us forward from nothing in the last couple of months, if we were to ignore that, if we were to let that go, if we were to go for another coach, you know, we could come to regret it, especially with the money that someone like Sarri or Conte would demand. And that is my big worry, is that we lose focus of what we've got here in front of us. I think we will definitely get European football now next season. I don't see a way that we don't finish in the top five, and it's very rare for me to make a bold prediction like that. But you know, I think this team's finally got into a rhythm whereby we can definitely pick up enough points to finish in the top five. Top four's another story, but you know, fingers crossed we can do that. And can you imagine Gattuso leading us out for one of those famous Champions League nights at San Siro again?
Oh, man.
Wow. So, yeah.
I think that's a great note to end it on.
Absolutely. Hey, leave him with the image of that and salivating at the thought of us turning over Bayern Munich at San Siro or something like that. Oh, those were the days. Those were the days. So yeah, on that note, let's hope that we can have a memorable European night on Thursday. And a reminder, you can catch the game, the post-match report and the player ratings, etc. over at SemperMilan.com. We'll have live tweets of the game as well at SemperMilan.com on Twitter. And you can find all our social channels, Twitter.com, Facebook.com, YouTube.com, Instagram.com, /SemperMilan.com for those. And yeah, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher and at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan specific rants. AJ, where can they find you?
My Twitter, as always, is Torgrud45. That's my last name and the number 45, like Balotelli. Like I said earlier, go retweet and favorite my currently pinned tweet trying to get Andre Silva to notice me so I could get his signed jersey. And no, I'm not mooching off him. I bought the jersey. I'm going to send it to him if he says yes, and hopefully have him send it back to me. So that's my game plan. Definitely give me a follow, like, retweet, all that good stuff. Check it out. And other than that, have a great night. Thanks for joining us.
yeah, fingers crossed, next episode we have good news regarding a signed Andre Silva shirt for you, mate. And just a final reminder, please download our app. Just search Sempre Milan on Google Play Store, Android Store, and of course the Apple Store. And you can get that for free and enjoy all our great content. But other than that, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. Goodbye.